Have you written a Ryan Gosling yet?
Look, my rant a couple of weeks ago about him being like the main performer at the Oscars and why would they choose a male performer from Barbie when Barbie was all about women taking a leading role. And then you pointed out after I did my rant that the song was a nominated song and they just played. Well, you didn't. Vera pointed out there was just a nominated song.
I can't take credit for that.
So yeah, Ryan, I'm sorry, mate. I'll buy you a beer next time I'm in LA.
I'm Ace Garwood.
I'm Ryan Gosling's new friend.
And this is Envoy Recorded Radio. Three.
Hey, on a serious note, this episode is in honor of a very brave little girl named Josie. I'm not going to use her last name. She passed away on Sunday at age 13 after she lost her fight with endless tumors. But I do want to say a big thank you to Riverside School, who opened up the school on Sunday to allow their former students to connect and grieve. And it is hard as a parent to imagine losing a child like that. But when schools step up to help students try to wrap their head around what's going on behalf of my little girl and all the other girls that were there, just thank you very much. And so today's work is in honor of Josie.
Josie. We are currently in Leesburg in maybe the most ridiculous venue that we have.
Do you know the history of this venue?
It was a training center
We're at the National Conference Center, which I think is privately owned, but is really just a place that the government holds training sessions. But it was built by Xerox as their like leadership development training center. And
really?
And it's all this brutalist architecture. And by design, is difficult to navigate. They made it difficult to navigate.
It's ridiculous.
Because some bright, quote, bright in inverted commas, quotation marks, leadership development expert thought that if you made it difficult to find your way around a building, you'd have to talk to strangers to ask directions. Instead,
rather than jump from the fourth floor balcony,
it could be said that there are just lots of angry people walking around the building trying to find the bloody room they're supposed to be in.
So apparently there's a tunnel, and if you just take the tunnel, you don't have to navigate all of this. But I think what struck me is we got here last night and went down to the bar, and they were playing like some classic rock, and it felt like what I can only describe as the cantina from Star Wars.
It was a bit like that.
Better description, it felt like a 1980s movie trying to predict what 2024 would be like. It was just this bizarre experience, and yeah, it was great.
So we're here with our friends from NASA, who right now, they're in that bar playing the role of the monsters, I guess.
Greedo
and everybody else. But last night, in our long tradition of yanking on social media, we posted a picture of this brutalist architecture and just tagged it as that we were in the Baikonur Cosmodrome in Kazakhstan, the center of the Russian space agency.
To which Vera then gets a text, "Are you in Kazakhstan?"
Anyway, people, stop believing social media. It's all a fabrication. And we're not talking about ours. We're talking about yours. Your social media is a fabrication. You don't really live that life. You really don't. So we're in Leesburg, Virginia. All right. So we're going to do a short episode because we have to get back to the monsters in the Brutalist Bar. But before we do that, let's just give a big shout out to our involuntary sponsor of the week, which is Sly Clyde Cider. Sly Clyde Cider that I can, weirdly, is based right next to a NASA center. It's based in Hampton, Virginia.
It's next
to NASA Langley, right by the Air Force Base there as well. And the reason that we think Sly Clyde Cider is the best cider on the East Coast is because they left
they
a bunch
sent
of
us
it.
Free
in the,
shit.
They sent us it.
look. Because the involuntary sponsor of the week is made up and we are not compensated does not mean we don't derive value from the things and doesn't mean we can't be bought. We're not above that. So send us free shit. We will shout out, maybe, if we like it, which we happen to do with Psych-Hide. So, Doug, thank you.
All right, let's move to the zeitgeist.
You wanted to talk about collaboration based on the Francis Scott Key bridge collapsing this morning.
Is it Francis Scott Key or Francis Key Scott?
Francis Scott Key. Huh. You're not American.
I don't know.
That's the thing that I would know.
So everybody will see it on the news because there was such dramatic footage. First of all, it looks like 6 to 8 people have lost their lives and they've called off the search this evening. But a Singaporean registered ship appeared to have lost power, went steaming into the bridge. The bridge immediately collapsed. This is a major freeway bridge on the East Coast. It may take 7 or 8 years to rebuild it.
Yeah.
It had collapsed immediately. It's not built. It wasn't designed to withstand the impact of a fully loaded cargo ship coming towards it. Looks like it was a complete accident. But in the good news, and actually if you watch the footage moments before various tractor trailers are going across the top of it, is that the ship got the message to the harbor master. There were 2 pilots on board, so Baltimore Harbor pilots on board, navigating through the harbor. They got the message to the bridge that there was a risk that it would be hit, and the Maryland authorities stopped the traffic on the bridge, and the loss of life looks like it was limited to construction workers working on the bridge. Now, why is that relevant? Well, because people are confused about why we do work with government and why we do work with state government and national governments. And it's this desire from leaders, whether it's governors or prime ministers or chief ministers, to have departments and agencies work together. You'll always have silos and differences.
Yeah.
But something worked this morning. The Port Authority or whoever runs Baltimore Harbor was in direct communication with state troopers. Like, the thing worked, that intergovernment collaboration.
Yeah.
And that's dependent not upon systems and processes, but upon human beings and attitudes and cultures. Kind of a nod to the state of Maryland. Things worked as well as they could do today.
Yeah, absolutely.
So building bridges has become more of a powerful metaphor than we thought.
Yeah. Let's talk. We did a little segment last episode about the art, the lost art, perhaps, of hanging out. And you did a little experiment around hanging out.
I didn't do an experiment. I just did as you said, and I hung out. Oh. But I felt very bad about it.
In the sense
that, yeah, I did, because it was so great. And then I felt guilty that I hadn't done much more of it.
Mm.
So I was hanging out with my youngest, with Dylan. She's 10 years old. And we tend to go, we do all kinds of activities, right? We do all sorts of outdoor activities together. But I said to her, do you want to just go on an adventure? And by adventure, I meant wander. And we went over to, there's a little stream near our house. We went down there and we, climbed over a tree and climbed over the stream and we found this little brook. But we didn't have any purpose. We were just roaming. We ended up building a little stone dam. We saw a beaver along the way, picked up some trash, but mainly just through rocks in a river.
Mm-hmm.
My point being, we didn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Ace, she had the best time. Like, the best time.
Yeah.
Completely unstructured, had nothing to do. And by unstructured, I don't mean like these hippie schools that go, and now we do unstructured time, which I was kind of thought was a bit weird.
I'm a Montessori kid, and I take offense to that.
Of course you're a Montessori kid. That explains everything.
Doesn't it?
But it was just, we talk about this, but we are robbing our kids of just free form time where you're burdened with time. And you talked about it with regard to adults. And I'm now realizing that, the gift that was my childhood, which was really my mother not really caring that much and being like, not that she didn't care, but get outside and you'll think of something to do.
Yeah.
And I know you were brought up in a similar way.
Very.
Is just how do we do more of that? So it was wonderful. Thank you for the tip.
On the adult front, I'll add to it as we're kind of building up this Rolodex of tools around hanging out. I was doing some landscaping this past weekend at one of my best friends who lives a couple blocks down. I told him what I was doing and He just came over to have some beers. And like, he wore clothes that he could get dirty and he helped, but he wasn't there to do the work per se. He was just there. And like, we do this in the neighborhood quite often across a group of friends who like to do handiwork around the house. It's just, hey, I need somebody to come over and make sure I don't die. And also, I have beers in the fridge. And so like, he'll be on the roof and he has no expectation that I climb on the roof to help him do roof stuff. I don't want to do that. But he would just having somebody around and shooting the shit while we're there. Like the idea of, hey, I need help with this project is different than you want to come hang while I work on this thing that I have to do anyway. And that reorientation of you can just be here. You don't have to help. There's no obligation. You just want to be here while I'm doing the thing, I think is really interesting. And that might be a way as you're doing your chores to just have somebody sit on the couch and raise their feet while you're vacuuming and chat while you're doing it. I'd encourage finding more places to just be together while you're doing a thing without an obligation.
You had a lot of people reach out to you about that, didn't you?
Yeah.
Like just hanging out thing.
It's been cool. So more of that, more conversation around it. If you have thoughts or ideas on how you hang out or what it looks like, ping us. And we'll share some of those tools or tips as well.
All right. Well, related to that, you may have seen the chatter online about really pushing this right to disconnect. France, it doesn't surprise anybody that France has various laws about employees not being bothered at weekends, but Australia is leaning into this now too, and they've got legislation going through the Senate, which is, you know, you can choose to work late and you can choose to work weekends, but companies don't have writing the legislation is tough, right? Because you're trying to give people freedom without imposing their inability to work. But it's really trying to just push back against this idea of employees always being connected and always on. And I'll be honest, I really struggle with this. I think there's a contradiction between us saying, hey, you can work the hours that you want to work as long as you get stuff done, with this idea of helping people switch off from the technology. Because in order to switch off from the technology, you have to have on hours. Therefore, you need off hours. Mm-hmm. So they, you know, you lean towards standard hours, whatever they are, eight till four, 9 to 5, whatever that happens to be. But at the same time, you want to respect that people have school runs or they have caregiving responsibilities. They may choose to work late in the evening. Well, that means things are being pinged and there are some things you need in real time. So I continue to really struggle with this. I think we've landed in the place where we say, hey, some people will work weekends because that fits with their schedule. But turn off your notifications. Likewise, some people work late or work very early. Same thing. Turn off your notifications when you're not on. I'm not convinced that teammates do that. I'm not sure they can resist it. Mm. Can you resist that red dot, Ace? Do you turn off your notifications?
I've gotten a lot better at it. Yeah. I it's funny. Like if I'm off 2 or 3 days, one to two days of those three notifications will be off. And one day, like, I'll have them on. And I don't know why. I don't know why. But, like, it's like the first day, it's almost I forget how to be off. The first day, my notifications are on. And then the second day, I'm like, oh, shit, I am off. And I turn them off. And then I turn them back on, like, as I'm spooling up. So you'll see notes the last evening I'm off is when I start kind of spooling up, just like I would on a Sunday at the end of a weekend. But, I don't always remember, like, something in me. It's hard. It's hard.
Which brings me to this week's Tool for Tools.
There we go. I don't know what the tool is, Scott. You stopped like I'm supposed to.
So related to the right to disconnect and how do we be on and off and switching off notifications, Tool for Tools is to embrace your sheer raw laziness as it comes to apps on your phone. So what you do if you want to switch off a little bit from work is not to completely disconnect from your work email, but simply remove it from, you know, on the phone you have, whether it's Outlook or Apple Mail, you just press that button that switches off the account, but still make it available through a web browser. So you say to yourself, if I want to check my email, I just go to the web browser and log in. But that requires two steps.
Yeah, the first is getting to the web browser and putting in a page. And the second for me is remembering my fucking password.
All of that. Yeah. All of that. And so when you're like, oh, I really need to check that email. So you haven't switched off connectivity. You've just added like 2 to 3 steps, including remembering a password. And you know what I find I do? I'm like, yeah, I'll look at it later. Yeah. And I just stay offline. and I stay a little bit more present. So Tool for Tools is just to not pretend, just how insanely lazy we are as human beings. Embrace that and just put a couple of barriers to entry to doing that behavior. They're called nudges. Nudges should be positive. In this case, it is a positive. We're actually putting up a negative barrier to a negative behavior.
Yeah.
Create those nudges for yourself.
Should we yell at clouds?
Let's do it.
Hey, I think it would help if we remembered what we talked about on any of these. The beauty of being able to put words to this is nobody expects we remembered what we talked about. So I'm just going to do it again. Princess Kate.
Oh.
Yeah, no, I'm going there, but I'm going to go there and not thoughtfully, just intentionally. This isn't a I told you so. I didn't actually have commentary on Princess Kate. I think we said something to the effect of Princess Kate said she'd be back in a couple months, and it's not a couple months yet. Of course, a lot of folks are up to speed on Princess Kate sharing that she has been diagnosed with cancer and is undergoing some treatments. And I believe she kind of framed it as voluntary chemo at this point, post-surgery. There's a lot of commentary about that. And what I want to talk about is the presumption of a right to know with respect to celebrity and these parasocial relationships that we have with folks. And we have seen
this.
Did
you say parasocial?
Yeah.
What's parasocial?
Well, the fact that you're asking me now means maybe I said it wrong. But if you Google that, that'd be great.
I think you might be into something.
Can you, parasocial, my understanding or my recollection is this idea that we have a relationship with
it's
a celebrity.
A one side relationship where one party extends emotional energy and the other party is completely unaware of
So the Taylor
Swift
the world referring to Taylor this and Taylor that and Taylor thinks. And I think we have seen that with respect to Taylor Swift's sexuality. And whether or not Taylor Swift is this closeted lesbian, and like the folks are having deep debate about this on the internet when Taylor Swift has just said, I'm straight. That's just the answer is I'm straight. If anybody want to ask me.
Oh, I see. So with the Princess of Wales,
yeah,
there was this whole debate that she wasn't part of about her health situation. Mm-hmm.
And then
the debate continues because she then comes out and says, hey, I've got cancer. And now it's the debate of, do we have the right to know what type of cancer that somebody has?
And should somebody have told us before and they handled it poorly? We saw this with Jonah Hill and his weight a couple years ago. We saw it with Adele and her weight a handful of years ago. We've seen it with Britney Spears. Like, go through the list of people with whom we have this expectation of information around as if they're not in the celebrity light because they happen to have been successful in a career that happens to be fan driven. So it's an interesting, I mean, obviously for two guys having a conversation on microphone with all of our millions of adoring fans listening, you know, I think really we're talking about
a snort into a microphone.
We're talking about our privacy as well. But no, I think there are real things. And I hope we feel like assholes a little bit, particularly around badgering someone into telling us they have cancer rather than expecting that maybe they're just out of the limelight for a minute because that shit is exhausting. Or maybe something deeper is going on. But more importantly, it doesn't matter. Let people live.
Yeah, I think people are confusing the right to know something with whether something was an effective media strategy or not. I'm not sure we would have advised to Kensington Palace to issue photographs that were, you know, not legit. Instead, just issue a release that says, hey, this is happening, and then be silent. That said, it doesn't silence the crowd. Do you have a right? Does anybody have a right to know? No, absolutely not. They don't. That said, if you have fed the beast, if you've fed the mob, whether you're Britney Spears or you're the Prince and Princess of Wales, maybe you have to stay with those tactics to manage it once you are in that space. And
But
it's not a right.
No, I'll push. I'll push. I think maybe in order to stave off the angry, now hungry, now used to being satiated mob, you have to continue with that. But it's Princess Kate and her media team's prerogative. Like, what is a mob going to starve? The idea that just because I have perpetuated this idea of access doesn't mean I have to continue that. And it's entirely a prerogative to just be like, you don't get any more. You don't get to keep eating and disappear. And yes, people will be up in arms because they're used to or accustomed to the thing. So I like your point that there is a difference between effective media strategy and someone's life, and the distinction is well made. It's understood, but we don't deserve anything.
I would separate out the royal family a little bit from celebrity.
You should have more.
I may have my citizenship removed for this, but when you're a family that dresses up in clothes and put yourselves on crowns and goes to the main cathedral, the main church, to be blessed by God and anointed for your right to rule, then there may be a different set of rules compared to, you know, you recorded some great records and made a bunch of money. I'm not sure they're the same thing. And that she's not an heir to the throne. It sounds so weird talking about this stuff. But maybe that's a little bit different. Though that said, if you continue tradition, the royal family have a long history of lying about the state of affairs. So we're just living up to that.
There we go.
Wow, I didn't think this would become Hello Magazine for brought to you by TMZ. TMZ? What do we say here? TMZ.
You can call it TMZ. TMZ. That's about as much as they deserve as a publication.
Why are we talking about Princess Kate? No, but yeah, okay, I got you. Yeah. So do you have the right to know about celebrities' lives? Yeah, I don't know. I think you...
No, the answer is no. Fuck off. That's the answer.
This is why you're not a celebrity, though. Like, so I don't think that... Like, these reveals, these journeys that you go on, like the cycle of like the celebrities down, the celebrities up, if you take those storytelling techniques that are used in Hollywood film, you see PR agents using those same stories to take their audiences on a journey that is supposedly real life and to manufacture it. I just think there's been a rebalance in the sense that, yeah, it would have been great in the 1940s to be a celebrity because you could pay off the LA Times journalist or whoever it was that was taking that staged photograph, and then you could put that story, and then you could go hide away in your mansion in Beverly Hills or in Mayfair in London. And now today there's just paparazzi everywhere because everybody's got their phone. So I get that the rules have changed, but maybe just the balance of power has changed.
I think we're talking about celebrity as product. And like, if we think about a product, think about a Big Mac. We don't have a right to a Big Mac. It's a product that McDonald's puts out on the market. And I think celebrity PR teams and labels, et cetera, do the same thing with celebrity. But if that product is no longer available or takes some hiatus or we stop manufacturing it for a second, people being up in arms about, hey, I deserve to have my Big Mac, fuck off to that too. I think that is... The idea and the relationship we have with consumerism is actually what I'm going at right now. It's the I'm supposed to have unlimited access to a thing. And no, you don't. That's the supply and demand's interesting. You are now demanding a thing. I can raise the price for it. But the inherent idea of supply, I think, is misguided by the general public. And I think we miss that sometimes for products and for people.
I think you've made the point, though. Like, the number of celebrities that sell the photo rights to Hello Magazine or Me Magazine or whatever it is to their weddings or the christenings of their child shows that there is a price on the head and they are a product. Yeah, it's just like McDonald's raising the price of... If you decide to turn yourself into a product, you can choose to, in most cases, and maybe royals are an exception... You can choose yourself to turn yourself into a not product. Actually, I suspect that Prince Harry and Meghan Markle have done that. Nobody's going to care in 5 years. Mm-hmm. they've chosen to be a not product and actually is struggling to generate attention. Meghan Markle released a brand of jam or jelly like last week and barely made a flitter of a tent. Why do I even know that?
Can I take this out of celebrity though? Because there's a trend that I think I'm seeing, particularly with respect to leaders and employment and the work we do around rights and responsibilities. I think we are societally conflating desire and right. I want it, therefore I deserve it. And those are two very different things. Like a right to a thing is built into constitutions, built into legislature, etc. And we might have a social contract that says I have access to this thing by nature of existing and being involved in society, but because I want it means I demand it. I'm seeing this entitlement that is rippling through society right now with, well, I want the context for this decision and I want the answer to that. And because I want it, I deserve it and you have to give it to me. And no, I don't. That is not the social contract we have signed. You might get it if I deign to give it to you. And if I don't, that's tough shit. I don't know what to tell you, but that's interesting.
So I get this. Because you are very, you get very frustrated when people are deploying their rights without their responsibilities because you feel there's always a responsibility that I have the right. Yeah, I see what you're saying. I have the right to this information. I have the right to make this decision, but we're not talking about, and I have the responsibility to respect the execution of that decision or respect the privacy now that I know the thing.
Yeah.
So what's missing in this Kate situation is radio silence from the press after she's announced the reason that she's been out of the public eye. The responsibility would be, okay, now give them the space.
Yeah.
And they're
not
meeting that responsibility.
Instead, it's, well, she did it. She announced she had cancer wrong. That's how we want to handle that. But I'm seeing this mismatch of right and responsibility, or the existence of right without the existence of responsibility. And I think that's important. We back to parasocial, the one-sided relationship. I have a right to all this information, but I don't owe them anything. I'm not sure that holds up.
Ace Colwood, the institutionalist.
Turns out. Who knew?
Well, soon we may not have to express our views or share that information, because you may have seen that the week before last, the first experiment of Neuralink was successful. So
is it really?
Neuralink is a brain implant, yet again, a company owned by Elon Musk that successfully moved. This seems like the smallest thing, yet is the biggest thing. Had somebody who had been severely disabled in a car accident, had extreme limitation in movement of the limbs, and were moving a computer cursor on a screen using their thoughts. It was a chess game, but it was through thoughts of a direct implant in the brain, was moving a cursor on a screen. Very rudimentary, very simplistic in terms of its application. But that may have been a point in history. Interestingly, I felt underreported relative to the chatter about AI, which is why we're now interacting with computer technology with our thoughts. I thought that was fascinating and really interesting. So Neuralink, it's actually happening.
There's a bit of Machiavellian orientation to Neuralink. For as much as they've gotten beat up for animal testing, et cetera, and maybe misreporting some data early on, like the outcome here is there's a 29-year-old who's moving a computer cursor with a device, ostensibly, allegedly.
Yeah.
How they got there also reported to have been pretty messy, and I think we're seeing some trade-offs there on this type of technology, on AI, etc. It's interesting.
So as we're talking about thought police, good news for Singapore last week. Singapore is almost destined to become the regional hub in Asia for business as a result of Article 23 being deployed in Hong Kong. It is a new national security law that criminalizes behavior such as, quote, the possession of information that is directly or indirectly useful to an external force.
What does that mean?
Well, that means is that the People's Republic of China is introducing laws. So the agreement in the handover of Hong Kong back to China from the UK was that they would have unique set of rights and laws in Hong Kong, that that various rights would be protected. So it'd be one country, two systems was sort of the phrase that they used on something like that. And over time, the PRC have sort of chipped away at those freedoms. And the latest round of this, you may remember the yellow umbrella protests from a few years ago that. Chipped away. So Article 23 in the realm, it's sort of being positioned as national defense to that Hong Kong is a hotbed of spies and foreign interference. And by the way, I don't doubt that. I don't doubt that for a second. But this broad law that essentially allows the national security apparatus of China to intervene into the lives of Hong Kongers, Hong Kong Chinese, based upon the possession of information that is directly or indirectly useful to an external force. That could be anything. So it says it's essentially a threatening piece of legislation that leads Hong Kongers to engage less in public debate, less in media that is critical of Beijing. And I would expect a flight of expatriate capital and employees. Yeah. And I suspect real estate in Singapore will be getting even more expensive.
I'd imagine so. As if it's not already.
Talking about travel, where are we next week?
Where are you going to be?
I'm going to be at Rogue Studios. I'm going to be in the same place all week. If I owe you a cup of coffee, I have no excuses. And you are based in Richmond, Virginia. If you are within 150 miles of Rogue Studios, then that is the time to hit me up, because I'm sitting tight. I've got a lot of stuff I want to work on.
Indeed.
I'm not going anywhere. What are you doing?
All right. I will be in London and then back to DC. So if I owe you money on either side of the pond, in the center of either of those universes, I'll be there.
That's great. So you'll be in the capital of the free world, and you'll also be in Washington, DC.
I knew something like that was coming.
Well, I'm Scott Wayne.
And I'm Ace Caldwell.
And this was most definitely Envoy Recorded Radio.
Maybe, though.